You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Good Tuesday morning to you. Michael McNamara here on a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. Let me encourage you, in case you do need some encouragement, don't be afraid to reach out to people in the medical community about mental health and what it takes to get through stuff and things like that. Right, because you can certainly ease their pain. So I'd recommend that to you. If you know people in the medical business, say, hey, if you have anybody that's really struggling, I have something that really works, and leverage your marineness and connection with the culture of Marine Corps, right? And all you have to do is say it comes out of our combat experiences. It comes out of decades of dealing with trauma, and I'd like to share it with you, right? And I read a story yesterday. I read a story yesterday that a 49-year-old doctor in New York City. Committed suicide. Yeah. Headline: hero emergency room doctor who treated New York City coronavirus patient dies by suicide at 49, according to her father. Quote, she tried to do her job and it killed her, Dr. Philip Breen told, said of his daughter, Dr. Loma N. Breen. The family of a top doctor at a New York City hospital has been left heartbroken after she died by suicide over the weekend amid the coronavirus pandemic, her father said. Dr. Lorna M. Breen, who served as the medical director of the emergency department at New York City Presbyterian Allen Hospital, died on Sunday at the age of 49, staying at her family's home in Charlottesville, Virginia, her father said. It's so, don't be afraid to reach out. And I can't tell you how frustrating it is for me. I've got a number of people have sent me a link to an article. the headline of the article is it's a study of it's on military.com, written by, who wrote it? Patricia Kimmy. Oh, I like her. I never met her, but I like her. I like what she writes. Marine Corps hit hardest by 2018 military suicide spike, new report shows. And, you know, for me, it's, you know, Marine Corps not interested in post-traumatic winning. Individual commanders are. Marine Corps is not. And I can't tell you how frustrating it is for me personally. So the only thing you have left is to, you know, to do what you do on your own, and that at some point, you know, something good's going to happen. And so that's the only thing that's left to you. It's the only thing that's left to me, is I know the power of it. I see it all the time. People see it. But trying to get decision makers to go against PhDs is not the easiest thing in the world. So you just keep knocking on the door, and at some point it'll fall down. But I just want to encourage you. You know, after reading that story, and then today this story about you know, suicide in the DOD, and again, you know, what post-traumatic winning does is simply draws on our history. Look, I'm going to tell you the truth. If you don't like it, I don't really give a shit. But this is the truth from our culture, and it has you know. So when you look at your when you look at your I lost my train of thought. Something popped up about my computer bandwidth, which distracted me. So no, it's just frustrating, you know, what you know you have something positive, what you know you have something to offer. And so, you know, to walk into, you know, a group of health providers and say, look, I know you guys are very educated people. Let me tell you kind of the blue collar mental health stuff that my culture knows to be true. And if you'll walk this path, you can certainly, you know, get through what you've been through. And let me show you that path. Let me show you the guidepost for that path. And, you know, what you do is you ease their pain. And so, anyway, don't be afraid to do that. I want to share with you this morning. I replaced a couple screens in my house yesterday. That's not really what I want to share with you, but I thought I would just say that. I'd never done that before. I know it's pretty low bar in terms of an accomplishment. I didn't even know how to do it. But like all other things, if you go to YouTube, you could figure it out. I didn't even go to YouTube, actually. I just kind of read a couple things about it. Yeah, replaced two screens. It was pretty awesome. And what was unbelievable is that nothing went wrong. Normally when I embark on it, normally there's some hidden thing in there that I didn't really know about and didn't anticipate. That I then have to solve in order to get where I want to go, right? Call it lack of experience and a lot of enthusiasm. I replaced a couple screens yesterday. But what I want to share with you is a couple of doctors in the Central Valley of California went on YouTube and it's one doctor's name's Dan Erickson, and the other one, his name is Dr. Artin, A-R-T-I-N, Massii, M-A-S-S-I-H-I. Now, what they talk about is the data that they've seen as practicing physicians, okay, as practicing physicians. And they quote the Stanford study. They quote studies from New York City. They quote, they look at data from Spain. They look at data from Sweden and Norway. And it's really interesting because I think from what I've seen, they're pretty balanced in their judgment. And in the first hour's post, you'll see the thing they sat down and did. I don't know. It sounds like a couple of media people are interviewing them, but it's them sitting down and rolling out what they've seen. And there's media people in the room asking questions. And the questions you'll see are very biased, one, towards calling this thing a pandemic and the continued shutdown of the nation. You'll notice a bias in every question they get asked. And so I would tell you to take the time and listen to this. You don't necessarily need to watch it because it's just them sitting in front of a camera in a conference room. So, and I think what's fair is that not only do they follow the data, but what they say is, they're brilliant, and then they echo what I say. When you're faced with uncertainty and you have your public health people saying, this is what we need to do, you know, you have a choice. You can either do that or not do that. Then beyond that, as data comes in, right, what do? You refine the course of action. And that's where we find ourselves today. That if you follow the data, you cannot continue to justify keeping the country where it is today. And as we've said before, you know, we're not all like New York City. So there's going to be 50 different solutions based on the current situations in 50 different states, and well, it should be. And the federal government should not be dictating this. It should be left to the states. And so I want to play about 20 minutes of that for you. So you'll hear that today. Here's an email. You seem to do a fair amount of speaking relative to the Marine Corps, Mac. I'm surprised at that. There is a... What you have inside the DOD are these big programs run by PhDs that don't work. That's what you have. And, you know, all you have to do is listen to the interviews I do with people. And they say when they listen to their comments about what they thought when they had to come to my class. And they all say the same thing. I was so pissed, man. I was so pissed that we were going to, and then they walk in and they get their life changed. And then they turn around and in fact change somebody else's life. And so, but my point in saying that is this. Their bias against all programs like that is based on the programs that have been served up by the DOD. They hate them. They don't speak to them. They don't help. And that's what the PhDs give you. And at no time do people look at them and say, at no time do people look at them and say, hey, I've got a program. No, at no time do people look at them and say, hey, you've got to reverse this thing. You got to validate all the money we're investing at some point. But the response is, well, it would be much higher without us. So you never have to reverse the trend? Well, I can tell you this. What I do reverses trends. But can't get through the PhDs. Yeah, sadly. All right. I want to play that, so I got to clear some space. The United States Marine Corps band makes it this morning official. Good morning to you. And this is dedicated to every governor in the United States. Don't be afraid. All right. Follow the data. Listen to your public health people. But all the data points to the same direction. And if you want to wait till you have a sure thing, you'll destroy the economy in your state. You'll send up suicide rates. You'll send up domestic violence rates. You'll send up child abuse rates. All of that. So this is dedicated to all you governors out there. All 50 of you, plus the guy in Puerto Rico, plus the guy in Guam, and any other protectorate that I'm not thinking of. All right? You need to learn how to navigate the gray area, that this is not going to be a black and white thing. And if you think you can lock the, you know, California's going to go through it. Right. I had a kid yesterday, I talked about it. A guy that said, looked at me and said, you know, Americans have a lot of guns. They're not going to stay at home for this. Some of this stuff is crazy. And he's not an old conservative dude, right? So anyway, so let's dedicate to you governors to have the moral courage to navigate the gray area of this issue. You have to, right? There's people out there who are dying financially, and you need to help them.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
When the danger is perceptible and the cost of acting are low, the failure to act guarantees that the threat will grow and the ultimate cost will be higher. Every day that goes by makes North Korea a more dangerous country. You don't like their behavior today? What do you think it'll be when they have nuclear weapons that can be delivered to American cities? Do you want to wait till then to act, or do you want to act now?
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right, time to check the weather. Partly sunny and 54 in Quantico, so cooler in Virginia. It is sunny and 70 degrees at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. Sunny 75 and 29 Palms, which means warm weather there. Fog and 62 at Pendleton. Dark, cloudy, and 73 at Camp Smith in Hawaii. Clear, dark, and 62 in Okinawa at Camp Butler. In Lashkarga, early in the evening, clear, dark, and 85, so it's warmed up there. And in Ramadi, late in the afternoon, sunny and 85. So beautiful day in Alhambra. Currently 65 under mostly cloudy skies here in Southern California. Looking for a high of 75 today, 74 tomorrow, and 74 on Thursday. Kaboom. All right. That's a look at your weather. Now, I want to play a little bit of a YouTube video for you. And the link to the whole thing is an hour and 4 minutes, and I'd encourage you to watch it. Okay? But these are two doctors. One is named Dan Erickson, and the other one name is Artin, like Martin, but without the M, Artin Ashimasihi, M-A-S-I-H-I. Okay, and they're talking about COVID-19 data, okay? And what you'll hear them say is the initial response, you know, was valid. Okay, where we are today no longer requires such drastic measures as the current stay-at-home orders, right? And all of that's data-driven, and you'll hear them quote data. So to me, the data in all of this will set you free. Now, here's the conundrum of the policymaker in this gray area. What policymakers say is, hey, I'm not going to have enough testing so I can give everybody a coronavirus test until June 15th. So I'm going to keep you at home until June 15th. Can't do that. So in this gray area where over 90% of all cases in any one of these studies recover. Okay, 90%. Now, if you further segment that into, you know, people from 0 to 20, people from 20 to 50, people from 50 to 100, right? You will find that all the COVID cases, right, that involve mortality, you know, statistically are located in the last group, over 50. 98% of those have one of those underlying. So there's a certain part of the population that we certainly need to, you know, protect, and they got to stay at home. But the vast majority of people, the COVID-19 virus comes and goes just like the flu does on an annual basis. So I want you to hear them talking about it, all right? Because this is what they do for a living. So, Dr. Dan Erickson and Dr. Artin Masihi. Now, I believe they're up in Bakersfield.
Whenever you want to start.
Okay. Well, thank you, everybody, for coming out.
That's Dan Martin.
We've really wanted to come together today and kind of just talk about what we've learned over the last couple months here at Accelerated, and really talk about what's happening in Kern County with our testing, what's happening in California with the testing.
Kern County is Bakersfield, just so you know.
Kind of an ER physician, entrepreneur perspective on what's going on, and kind of what we think the approach should be going forward. And Dr. Masihi and myself have been dealing with this as you have. I'm sure you guys are working from home, you're sheltering in place, you're isolating yourself, and We want to talk about if that still makes sense. So we want to kind of take everything we've learned and throw it against the backdrop of who we are. You know, we both have had extensive classes in microbiology and biochemistry and immunology. We've studied this for each of us 20 years, and we take everything that we're seeing today and we put that against that backdrop and say, does this make sense? Are we following the science? We keep hearing following the science. What is science essentially? It's the study of the natural world through experiment, through observation. So that's what we're doing. We're studying the disease around us. We're making observations. We're doing testing, experiments to figure out exactly what's going on. And so this has caused some severe disruption for Accelerated, as we have people coming in 7 in the morning till midnight. We're reporting to the health department. We're calling patients back. And at the same time, our volumes have dropped significantly. The hospitals, their ICUs are empty, essentially. And they're shutting down floors. They're furloughing patients. They're furloughing doctors. So the health system has been evacuated in certain places. In New York, the health system is working at maximum capacity. In California, we're really at a minimal capacity, getting rid of our doctors and nurses, because we just don't have the volume. The hospitals don't, as I've met with their CEOs twice in the last week, and we don't as well. So we're busy with paperwork for COVID, and we're all focusing on COVID. And so one of the things I'd like to talk about is when I talk to ER physicians around the country, what's happening? Well, because COVID has become the focus, people with heart disease, people with cancer, hypertension, and various things that are critical are choosing not to come in based on fear. So what that's doing is causing the health system to focus on COVID and not focus on a myriad of other things that are critical because we don't have the staff there. And the major component is fear. People are saying, I don't want to go get seen by my doctor. What if I get the COVID? So there is a lot of secondary effects to COVID that aren't being talked about. And so we'd like to kind of look at how we responded as a nation and why we responded. Our first initial response 2 months ago was a little bit of fear. We decided to shut down travel to and from China. These are good ideas when you don't have any facts. We decided to keep people at home and isolate them. Even though everything we've studied about quarantine, typically you quarantine the sick. When someone has measles, you quarantine them. We've never seen where we quarantine the healthy, where you take those without disease and without symptoms and lock them in your home. So some of these things, from what we've studied from immunology and microbiology, aren't really meshing with what we know as people of scientific minds that read this stuff every day. So that's kind of how we started. We don't know what's going on. We see this new virus. How should we respond? So we did that initially. And over the last couple months, we've gained a lot of data. Typically in Kern County, for instance, we've tested 5,213 people, and we have 340 positive COVID cases. Well, that's 6.5% of the population, which would indicate that there is a widespread viral infection, similar to flu. We think it's kind of ubiquitous throughout California. We're going to go over those numbers a little bit to kind of help you see how widespread COVID is and see how we should be responding to it based on its prevalence throughout society or its the existence of the cases that we already know about. So if we look at California, these numbers are from yesterday. We have 33,865 COVID cases out of a total of 280,900 total tested. That's 12% of Californians were positive for COVID. So the initial models were woefully inaccurate. They predicted millions of cases of death, not of prevalence or incidence, but death. That is not materializing. What is materializing in the state of California is 12% positives. Well, if we have 39.5 million people. If we just take a basic calculation and extrapolate that out, that equates to about 4.7 million cases throughout the state of California, which means this thing is widespread. That's the good news. We've seen 1,227 deaths in the state of California with a possible incidence or prevalence of 4.7 million. That means you have a 0.03 chance of dying from COVID-19 in the state of California. 0.03 chance of dying from COVID in the state of California. Does that necessitate sheltering in place? Does that necessitate shutting down medical systems? Does that necessitate people being out of work? So that's California. And that's, I also wanted to mention that.
Now let me just sensitize you to one thing. And this goes to the shelter-in-place orders. While the shelter-in-place orders restricted the number of cases, all right, they wouldn't impact the percentage, right, that died. It limits the scope of the problem. It doesn't. So inside of who's been infected and who ultimately dies from it, that it doesn't have any effect. So the total number of people that got it has been impacted by the shelter in place order. The percentages inside that, does that make sense, are not impacted, right? So inside the people that are affected, inside the people that had it and were exposed to it, is tends to be a broad segment of the population. So I just wanted to say that.
96% of people in California who get COVID recover with almost no significant sequelae or no significant continuing medical problems. So those are important statistics for the state of California. 2 months ago, we didn't know this. So I'm going to bring it to light now because we're sharing our own data. This isn't data filtered through someone. This is our own data. We found 6.5%, and then California has found 12%. So the more you test, the more positives you get, the prevalence number goes up, and the death rate stays the same. So it gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And as we move through this data, what I want you to see is millions of cases, small amount of death. Millions of cases, small amount of death. And you will see that in every state. And if we, and since we're talking about following the science, we're going to follow the statistics and follow the science. So I want to look at New York State. They've been in the news a lot, right? And their numbers are critical. Let's go over their numbers. Cases of COVID as of yesterday, 256,272 cases in New York State. Not New York City, New York, the entire state. They did a total of 649,325 tests. That's 39% of New Yorkers tested positive for COVID-19. That's their ratios. This is public data online. You can all look it up.
39% of people were tested.
39% of the people were tested.
Not 39% of New York State.
Right.
39% of New York State, if there's 20 million people there, would be close to, you know, 4 million.
Which is likely, they likely have 7.5 million cases in New York.
But I just want to make that clarification. Yeah. Not 39% of every New Yorker, it's every New Yorker who's been tested.
Right, so we extrapolate data. We extrapolate data, we test people, and then we extrapolate for the entire community based on the numbers. The initial models were so inaccurate, they're
but
not even...
That, but in those initial models, a lot of them were based off if we didn't know social distancing.
Right.
Is that correct? So is it really a fair to say, obviously they're not as bad as they were because those were based on alternative scenarios.
And some of them were based on social distancing and still predicted hundreds of thousands of deaths, which has been inaccurate. So in New York, the ones they tested, they found 39% positive. So if that's indicative, and they tested 649,000 people, that's a massive test. That's accurate data, 39%. So if they tested the whole state, would we indeed have 7.5 million cases? We don't know. We will never test the entire state. So we extrapolate out. We use the data we have, because it's the most accurate we have versus a predictive model that have been nowhere in the ballpark of accurate. So how many deaths do they have? 19,410 out of 19 million people, which is a 0.1% chance of dying from COVID in the state of New York. And they have a 92% recovery rate. If you are indeed diagnosed with COVID-19, 92% of you will recover. So we're seeing millions of cases, small amount of death. Millions of cases, small amount of death. And the reason I'm making that point is because we're going to compare this to flu and say, is this significantly different from influenza A and B? And if not, why has our response been what it is? USA, this is a big one for us. 802,590 cases as of yesterday. We've tested over 4 million. If you guys have studied globally what's happening, that's double what any other country, Germany's at 2. I realize their populations are lower, but the fact that we were able to ramp up and do 4 million is pretty impressive, which gives us a 19.6% positive out of those who are tested for COVID-19. So if this is a typical extrapolation, 328 million people times 19.6 is 64 million. That's a significant amount of people with COVID. It's similar to the flu. If you study the numbers in 2017 and 2018, we had 50 to 60 million with the flu, and we had a similar death rate. In the deaths in the United States were 43,545, similar to the flu of 2017-2018. We always have between 37 and 60,000 deaths in the United States every single year. No pandemic talk, no shelter in place, no shutting down of businesses, no sending doctors home.
That's from the flu, by the way, just to clarify.
Yeah. 37,000 and 60,000 flu deaths
37.
Every year, per the CDC.
Due to flu.
Okay. In the United States. Some years, it's even as low as 20,000 some year. In 2017-2018, it was 45 to 50,000, depending on who you read. And we don't necessarily report all of our flu tests. We do thousands of flu tests every year. We don't report every one because the flu is ubiquitous. And to that note, we have a flu vaccine. How many people even get the flu vaccine? The flu's dangerous. It kills people. So just because you have a vaccine doesn't mean it's going to be everywhere. And it doesn't mean everyone's going to take it, because we see every year that we have a vaccine and I would say probably 50% of the public doesn't even want it. So just because you have a vaccine, unless you force it on the public, doesn't mean they're going to take it. I want to compare the U.S. to Spain, because Spain is number two in the race for the most cases, which is not a race we want to win. They had 204,178 cases in Spain, 930,000 total tests. So we did 4 million, they did 930,000. They had a 22% of all COVID tests were positive in Spain. 22% of those tested were positive in Spain. Spain has 47 million people. So that equates to about 10 million cases. If we extrapolate the data, as we've been doing with every state, gives us about 10 million cases. How many died in Spain? 21,282 out of 47 million. You have a 0.05 chance of dying from COVID as a citizen of Spain, and a 90% chance of recovery from COVID without being on a vent, without being in hospital. I wanted to compare the U.S. to Spain because we have the most amount of cases globally. So I thought that was important. And then when you bring up a system of lockdown, you automatically have to compare it to a system of no lockdown, Sweden and Norway. I'm Norwegian. Norway has lockdown. Sweden does not have lockdown. What happened in those two countries? Are they vastly different? Did Sweden have a massive outbreak of cases? Did Norway have nothing? Let's look at the numbers. Sweden. Sweden has 15,322 cases of COVID. They did 74,600 tests, which is 21%, similar to the other countries, 21% of all those tested came out positive for COVID. What's the population of Sweden? About 10.4 million. So if we extrapolate out the data, about 2 million cases of COVID in Sweden. They did a little bit of social distancing. They would wear masks and separate. They went to schools. Stores were open. They were almost about their normal daily life with a little bit of social distancing. They had how many deaths? 1,765. California's had 1,220 with isolation. No isolation, 1,765. We have more people. What I'm getting at is millions of cases, very small death. Millions of cases, very small death. This is what we're seeing everywhere. Norway, its next door neighbor. This is where I come from. These are two Scandinavian nations. We can compare them as they are similar. Let's look at the data. Norway, 7,191 cases of COVID. Total COVID tests, 145,279. So they came up with 4.9% of all COVID tests were positive in Norway. Population of Norway, 5.4 million. So if we extrapolate the data as we've been doing, which is the best we can do at this point, they have about 1.3 million cases. Now, their deaths as a total number were 182, fairly small, but statistically insignificant from 1,700, you realize. Millions of cases, small amount of deaths. 1,700, 100, these are statistically insignificant. So you have a 0.003 chance of death as a citizen of Norway and a 97% recovery. Their numbers are a little bit better. Does it necessitate shutdown, loss of jobs, destruction of the oil company, furloughing doctors? That's the question I have for you. And I think the answer is going to be increasingly clear as we move through this data. The next thing I wanted to talk about is the effects of COVID-19, the secondary effects. COVID-19 is one aspect of our health sector. What has it caused to have us be involved in social isolation? What has it caused that we are seeing the community respond to? Child molestation is increasing at a severe rate. We could go over multiple cases of children who have been molested due to angry family members who are intoxicated, who are home, who have no paycheck. These things last a lifetime. This isn't about a seasonal flu. These are things that will follow these people and affect them in a negative fashion for their life. And these are secondary effects from COVID. And these are for me talking to ERs, talking to my doctors, and talking to people across the country and finding out what they're seeing. Spousal abuse. We see people coming in here with black eyes and cuts on their face. It's an obvious abuse case. These are things that will affect them for a lifetime, not for a season. Alcoholism, anxiety, depression, suicide. I talked to Donnie Youngblood and various people in the community. I've asked them, how are things going? Suicide is spiking. Education has dropped off. Economic collapse. Medical industry, we're all suffering because our staff isn't here and we have no volume. These are all real things that I'm seeing every day. I don't read about this stuff. I'm seeing it in my clinics. We have clinics from Fresno to San Diego, and these things are spiking in our community. These things will affect people for a lifetime, not for a season. So let's make sure we're clear on that. So we've gone over the secondary effects. We've gone over the statistics. Now I want to compare flu virus. Is this significantly different? And I just got a little bit of data here. So deaths, per the CDC, 24,000 to 62,000 deaths each year. We had about 45 million total cases in 2017 with about 62,000 deaths, or a 0.13 chance of death from flu in the United States. As you know, our other numbers were 0.02. So the lethality of COVID-19 is much less. Now, you've got hotbeds of it in New York, but again, we went over the numbers, 0.1% chance of death. Widespread, small amount of deaths. It's similar to flu, as a matter of fact. If we follow the science, as we've been asked to do, I'm following the science. This data is generated by the CDC, World Health Organization. The testing is generated by what we have done here. So we are following the science. Now I want to talk about the immune system. Dr. Masihi used to teach for immunology. We both had years of microbiology, biochemistry, and virology studies. We've made it our life's work to understand this stuff. And here, I'd like to go over some basic things about how the immune system functions so people have a good understanding. The immune system is built by exposure to antigens, viruses, bacteria. When you're a little child crawling on the ground, putting stuff in your mouth, viruses and bacteria come in, you form an antigen-antibody complex, you form IgG, IgM. This is how your immune system is built. You don't take a small child, put them in bubble wrap in a room and say, go have a healthy immune system. This is immunology, microbiology 101. This is not something, this is the basis of what we've known for years. So what I'm seeing is when you take human beings and you say, go into your house, clean all your counters, Lysol them down. You're going to kill 99% of viruses and bacteria. Wear a mask. Don't go outside. What does it do to our immune system? Our immune system is used to touching. We share bacteria, staphylococcal, streptococcal bacteria, viruses. We develop an immune response daily to this stuff. When you take that away from me, my immune system drops. As I shelter in place, my immune system drops. You keep me there for months, it drops more. And now I'm at home, hand washing vigorously, washing the counters, worried about things that are indeed what I need to survive. Let's follow the science. This is immunology, folks. This is microbiology. This is what we've combined together. We have 40 years of experience in this. This is common sense immunology.
So quarantining and social distancing is worse for us, you're saying?
It decreases your immune system. You can't build an immune system by... If someone has a reduced immune system, you hide them away because they can't build an immune system. If you have a normal functioning immune system, you need interaction. When a child's in a womb, you're in this protected environment. When you come out, you have almost no immune system. You develop that through touching your mouth, touching your eyes, virus, bacteria, immune response, IgG, IgM. This is how you build a strong immune system.
You think people are worrying too much?
Of course they are, but that's from media telling them to. I am telling them sheltering in place decreases your immune system. And then as we all come out of shelter in place with a lower immune system and start trading viruses and bacteria, what do you think is going to happen? Disease is going to spike. And then you've got disease spike amongst a hospital system with furloughed doctors and nurses. This is not the combination we want to set up for a healthy society. So it doesn't make any sense.
So is Dr. Fauci wrong then when he says that COVID-19 is shown to be nearly 10 times deadlier than the flu?
Initially, maybe that was true. But again, I'm going through the numbers. I'm not saying who's wrong or right. I'm going through the science and through the numbers. And I, like you, have been watching media and studying this for 2 months, night and day. I go to bed at 2 or 3 in the morning. Every day I read after my shift. and I say, what's going on here? I'm not in an ivory tower. I'm in seeing patients every day, and I'm collecting my own data. I didn't have data 2 months ago. I just shared my data. 6.5% of all patients we tested are positive. That's actual, unfiltered, non-political data.
So respectfully, to go off that question, and I know you guys are obviously very intelligent, very accomplished physicians, do you think that you guys know more than the top immunologists in the entire United States, and that basically every country in the world has got this wrong?
How about this for an asshole question, right? You wonder why people hate the media. You guys are obviously, right, very very intelligent people. Do you think everybody else is stupid?
I'm not saying, again, I'm sharing the data. I'm not saying we're right, somebody's wrong.
But more conclusions from that data are different than what?
Listen to this. And what happens is you'll hear the doctor say, right, the guy, he said, and he looks at the guy and he says, and he uses the word argument, right? And the reporter, he's not a reporter, right? Because he's got a bias. So he's not reporting. He's arguing with him. But then he says, not an argument, a question. So listen to this. It's why reporters are bullshit.
The top doctors worldwide are concluding. Why is that?
They had no data. The data is coming
the
in.
The World Health Organization and the U.S. government has no data.
No, I'm saying you have to give the virus time. From December to now, there was tons of hypotheses. You have to let the data work. Let the virus rise up. Then we study it and we see, did we respond appropriately? Initially, the response, fine, shut it down. But as the data comes across and we say, now, wait a second, we've never, ever responded like this in the history of the country. Why are we doing this now?
And you don't think that they're also studying that data and that their data is even more accurate and more timely than what we're getting here on
Crown? Go ahead.
Yeah. What's your first name?
Tim.
So I think my...
Oh, sorry.
Now, this is Dr. Artin Masihi.
Thank you for your question. I think your question is valid. And obviously, Dr. Fauci is a world-renowned immunologist. And a lot of the data that they originally gave us was theoretical because coronavirus is a new virus. We've studied coronavirus since the 70s. Coronavirus was...
we studied different coronaviruses. This one is novel. Like SARS is a form of coronavirus, MERS is a form of coronavirus.
Sure.
We studied different types, but this one is new. So with all due respect, again, we haven't studied this virus.
But if you let me...
Okay, so just things you know, right, from listening to All Marine Radio. When somebody says, with all due respect, what comes next is disrespectful, right? And so the doctor will finish what he's saying right here. He says, if you'll let me finish. So listen to what he says.
So every year, according to your argument that you just made, every year...
Not an argument, just a question.
So you heard all that fucking argument, right? And then he denies that he's arguing with him. Right? It just makes you hate him even more.
Every year when we get the flu, it's a new flu virus, correct?
Correct.
But 99% of it is flu, correct? The way viruses change, they undergo mutations through their DNA, deoxyribonucleic acid. There are different types of mutations which either cause increased virulence and more likely decreased virulence, meaning virulence meaning how dangerous a virus is. So when coronavirus was, we've been studying coronavirus since the 70s. And this type of coronavirus that came out was first and foremost transmissible through human beings, and that was new. And I think any time you have something new in the medical community, I've been a doctor for 26 years. Any time you have something new in the medical community, it sparks fear. And I would have done what Dr. Fauci did, so we both would have initially. Because the first thing you do is you want to make sure you limit liability and limit deaths. And I think what they did was brilliant.
Notice what was the first thing that he said, liability or death? Liability, right? Oh, it's about people being liable.
Initially. But, you know, looking at theories and models, which is what these folks use is very different than the way the actual virus presents itself throughout communities. And there's different communities we're talking about here. Bakersfield, a lot more widespread than Manhattan. Very, very different. So you can't really, theory and reality are not always the same. And that's what Dr. Erickson is presenting. It's not about being right or wrong. Medicine, what they teach us is you practice medicine. I'm learning every day. So is Dr. Erickson. We all learn every day. It's not about being right, who's wrong. It's not a basketball game, who made the basket, who didn't. It's about looking at trends and saying, hey, we're not seeing what they've been talking about for the past 6 to 8 weeks. We've crippled the economy. There's a lot of domestic issues going on. Is social isolation warranted for the healthy?
So I
now I'm going to end it there. That's 25 minutes into it. So you've got another 39 minutes to listen to on your own. I would recommend that you listen to it. And so the final point that Dr. Masihi makes is this, right? Is stay at home appropriate for what everybody tells us are the healthy people in our country? The people that don't statistically get impacted by COVID-19. And the answer to that is no. You're seeing recovery rates. And what they say is they recover without having to be on a ventilator or without having to go to an ICU, right? 96, 92, 97, 90. That's California, New York, Spain, Norway, Sweden, you know. I mean, all those. So what these guys get at is, and again, I like it because it's data driven, and I mean, look, I'm not a doctor. I do play one on the radio, and but I'm no stranger to data. Okay, I'm no stranger to data. I've done data, whether it be economic data, whether it be ID data. Whether it be where our KIA are coming from data and who should get Humvees first, right? Data is data, and you look at it. And 2 points I would make. One is that given what public health officials initially thought and the uncertainty, you would expect them to err on the side of caution. I think that would be the responsible thing to do, which I think that we have. As the data comes in, right, you got to evolve the position. Now, where elected officials find themselves is the public health people are telling me that I'm not going to have all the testing I want in place until July. It's April 28th today. And for me to have zero culpability in all of this, I got to keep us locked up until July. Ain't happening. Right. And so now we get into the gray area of decision making. I don't have all the testing I want. Right. The data it continues to come back every day, putting incredible pressure on me. Right. To openness, to open businesses back up. But there's political risk in that. And if I screw it up, I'm not going to get reelected. And so should I err on the side of safety again? Well, let me tell you, people aren't having it. And what you're. And so know this, they're going to say, well, incidents of coronavirus are going to go up. That's fine because 90%+ of those people are going to recover without a problem. All right. Now, the way you send that data even higher is you look at the people, right, that have those factors or those comorbidity factors, and you tell them you got to stay at home. And then the recovery rate will go even higher because the people who we don't want to be infected with the coronavirus aren't going out. So the people who can be infected are going out, and then the recovery rate will continue to go up. So you could thread this needle, but it takes some courage, right? It takes some courage. Now, I don't know much about the governor of Georgia, but he bucked the trend, certainly. So... Interesting stuff. Again, coming from it from an empirical perspective. And what was good about this is it's, you know, they're pulling in data from different, you know, again, and all the data comes from the CDC websites. All right. And I want to, the other thing I want to just, you know, so how does, you know, we tend to talk about the DOD on the program a fair amount. If you look up the USS Theodore Roosevelt, right, and they have 4,800 people. They've had 840 test positive with 100% of the crew tested. As of last Friday, there were 4 sailors hospitalized and none in the ICU. So think about that. So relative to the DOD and a population of 4,800 Navy, and let me tell you, the Navy has a fair amount of obesity in it. Okay? But even given that, what's 1 divided by 480? I'll tell you what it, it's going to be a stupid number that my bullshit computer calculator won't even tell me. It'll give me some kind of, yeah, it'll give me some kind of bullshit. Yeah. Number that I can't even read. 2.08333333E-6. Like, I don't even know what the fuck that is. Okay. All I know, it's just beyond zero. That's DOD. So, again, now we're going to go through this. The USS Kidd has cases. So, to me, and the Marine Corps canceled its PFT. All this is Chicken Little nonsense, right? If you're not sure, then you should go to the middle ground and say, we're not prepared to make a decision on that. We will be prepared, right? And we believe the picture's going to clear because the data coming in right now tells us that it's much more prevalent in our culture. We want to see more of it. It's much more prevalent in our culture, which means the death rate is below the annual flu. So, again, right now, I'm not going to make a decision on the PFT. We're going to go sideways for probably 30 days. We'll continue to monitor numbers, and then we'll make a decision about that. Like, how hard is that? But it's just all this Chicken Little, you know, panic stuff. Now, it's different. So the PFT, so that means I'll tell you all by May 1st, right? That means you have 60 days if you haven't been PTing to get your fat ass ready to PT, okay? And if you haven't been PTing, then that's on you. You know, you're supposed to be ready to go all the time. So anyhow, but it's different. For instance, Orange County, California, just canceled its annual Orange County Fair that happens 2 blocks from my house. And why is that? Well, there's a fair amount of planning that has to go into it. I'm sure there's contract liability that sits out there, right? Cancellation insurance that sits out there. And them talking to public health people saying, well, the fair is problematic, okay? And your liability is out there because it's all hands-on stuff. It's close human interaction. How do you social distance at the fair? Answer is you probably can't, okay? And then really, and you heard the doctor when he talked about death and liability, he talked about them in the reverse order. He said liability, then he said death. Now, I don't want to make any value judgment, but that's how businesses look at this stuff. Am I going to be liable because somebody came here and got the COVID-19 virus? And if I am, then I've got to cancel this thing, okay? And so you have things that decisions that need to be made today and then things that don't. And so anyway, just a little bit of data-driven analysis here on a Monday. Top stories in the world today. Department of Defense, this is above the fold in Stars and Stripes, Defense Department report reveals military occupations with the highest suicide. And that's where the article about the Marine Corps had the highest suicide rate in 2018. Asymptomatic Reagan Strike Group sailors test positive for COVID after sequestration. So those are the major stories in Stars and Stripes. There was one in USNI News that I wanted to get to. Hospital ship Comfort ends its New York City COVID-19 mission after treating, get this. So the Comfort jumped through its ass to get underway, right? Ran up to New York City. Great fanfare. How many patients do you think they treated? 182. And I would tell you this, the majority of that 182 probably could have been treated elsewhere. And somebody said, get them on the Comfort so we can validate having it there. So that in the news. That website that I talked about, just the news, I checked that. Top headline. Censorship during pandemic creates new backlash against Facebook and YouTube. Yeah, interesting stuff. Another headline there. Illinois governor's stay-at-home order infringes on civil liberties, rules a judge. So, interesting stuff. Top stories relative to the Marine Corps. There's a study that says who joins the military and why, but the findings aren't what many assume. So the discussion is, you know, people think that people who join the military are from lower socioeconomic classes. That's not the way it is. So probably talk about that tomorrow because Grant Newsham's coming on here in a couple of minutes. There's a picture of Marines of the 31st MU descending down cargo nets. No shit. Why is that? Oh, our new amphibs, right? They don't have well decks. What? Yeah, they don't have well decks. Interesting. Top five stories in Early Bird, and then we'll take a quick break. Destroyer Kid nears 50 coronavirus cases as more than half the crew awaits testing. Now, remember this. 90%+ of them, right? And so I don't even have the – oh, I'll do it in – yeah, I can get a, yeah. So 1 divided by 4,800 is, you know, in terms of a percentage, is 0.021%. That is 1 out of 4,800, which is what happened on the Roosevelt, which is its own right protected experiment because they were on that ship together. The kid will see something the same. The kid will see something akin to that. And so to me, a lot of the uncertainty of this, those statistics, you know, help blow the smoke out of the room. Okay? Hey, should we bring the kid back to port? What percentage, you know, of the number I want from the Roosevelt is how many were hospitalized? How many were hospitalized? Right now, there's like nobody in the hospital anymore. So anyway, so that's number two. Pentagon Esper was too slow with coronavirus response, according to Senate Democrats. Number three, 20% of the Roosevelt crew tested positive, which is in line with the other statistics we've seen. Spain had 22%. Sweden had 21%. Across the United States nationally, 19.6%. New York State had 40%, right? California is at 12%. So anyway, right in line with numbers coming in from around the world. I sound like Wolf Blitzer in the Situation Room. Number four, the Situation Room, man. Thank God. Thank God going to war is not nearly as dramatic as the Situation Room. Nobody could do it for more than 5 hours. Number four, storm cloud awaits Pentagon's request for defense industry cash injection. Number five, Pentagon releases videos of encounters between UFOs and Navy pilots. The best part of those things is hearing the pilots say, "What the fuck?" Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Grant Newsham joins us here, and we'll talk to Grant about North Korea. We'll talk to Grant about China, and we'll see what's going on with Grant. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.